The first halacha that is important to know is the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says that somebody who is shoel, who asks a shayla, is not good. V'hanishal, I believe the Lashon Yerushalmi is k'shofech damim. That means that if you have a suffix, if somebody needs pikuach nefesh on Shabbos, or in this case, eating on Yom Kippur, and has a question of life or death at hand, that you go to ask a shayla in a way that could delay the person's treatment or put the person at a higher risk, so you're in a very bad place. And more important for us as future rabbanim, somebody hanishal. What the nishal do? Why is the rabbi who has asked the shayla a shofech damim? Says the, I don't remember who it is, the Yerushalmi or itself, I think, that if somebody, or those who explain the Yerushalmi, that if a Rav has a shul and doesn't let his balabatu know that for pikuach nefesh, or even suffik pikuach nefesh, one has to do whatever you need to do to save the life, it is on the shoulders of the nishal, meaning of the rabbi of the shul who didn't give that shir at the beginning of his rabbinate. And therefore, Be'ez Hashem, when you become rabbanim, it's important somewhere towards the beginning of your rabbanis, you make sure you let people know that if there's a fire in an urban neighborhood, you have to put out the fire on Shabbos. If somebody is, there's a suffix, pikuach nefesh, you have to let your balabatu know such halachos of pikuach nefesh b'Shabbos. And, of course, when it comes to eating on Yom Kippur as well, if there's a suffix, pikuach nefesh, your balabatim should not have the possibility of asking the questions. They should know, do what they need to do. Now, when you are a Rav, one of the most important things that you want to do for your own schedules is send out an email 2 weeks before Yom Kippur. Anybody who has any medical condition, please speak to the rabbi at least a week before Yom Kippur. Because what often happens is as you're sitting down to your Seudas HaMafsekes and you're getting ready with your Kol Nidre Drasha and you want to give your children their Birchas Ha'av, and you're figuring out what tie you're going to wear and finding your white yarmulke, all of a sudden you get 7 phone calls that each of which need about 20 to 25 minutes of conversation, and you're not going to be able to do any of them justice. So by encouraging your balabatim to ask their shailas about medical situations well before, that gives you time not only to speak to them, but oftentimes there are numerous conversations because you have to speak to them to get the groundwork, then you have to ask permission to speak to their doctor. Usually doctors, they have to then tell their doctor that they give permission, or they have to. You have to reach their doctor. All these things could take a few days. Then you have to speak with the doctor, then you have to clarify it, or sometimes you need to clarify with one of your own doctors whom you trust. And then you finally get back with the psak, and that process could take, not that it's a lot of, it might not be so time-consuming, but it might happen over the course of 2 or 3 days, so you want the shalas to come to you early. Now, the Mishnah Brura in Hilchis, just so you know, where the halachas of eating on Yom Kippur for Chola, it's Shulchan Aruch Tuf Reish Yud Ches. Tuf Reish Yud Zayin is the halachas of a Mubaras, and a Manika and a Yoledes, and Tuf Reish Yud Ches is the halachas of a Chola. That's what we're going to be learning today, the details of those two simanim. And it's important before Yom Kippur to prepare those two simanim, to know them well. I'll tell you two great places to prepare. One is the Mishnah Brura, of course, with the deer shoe, the notes from the deer shoe. It's a great source. And also the Nishmas Avram, which a lot of the stuff of the Dirshu was taken from the Nishmas Avram. Those are, if you sit down a week before Yom Kippur, 2 weeks before Yom Kippur, and spend, 2 or 3 hours going through and underlining, you will be it will be very good for your Rabbanus. Now, the Mishnah Berurah also points out that when somebody does ask a Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos, or on Yom Kippur in this case, Ein Cholkin Kavod L'Rav. You might not know, somebody else knows the answer. They're going to, say what the answer is. Anyone who knows the answer should answer immediately. We're not worried about Kavod HaRav when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh. It's also important to realize that Ramban in the Mechamos writes that when it comes to a Cholesh Yesh Basakana, there's no Maila or Midas Chasidus to fast. If a person should not be fasting and they do fast, to the contrary, Damo Benafsho, and that is the wrong thing to do. One interesting social perspective that we're going to put out in the beginning of this year, and you'll see where it will come up in a few minutes, is that there's a very significant difference between the pregnant women of our generation and previous generations. More so, I think the way it will become manifest is a gigantic difference between the people in Yeshua who are below 50 years old and over 50 years old. What I mean by that is the following. Anyone in your shul who's over 50 years old cannot begin in a million years to understand how you could possibly eat on Yom Kippur, and will ask you for permission to, even though the doctor says they should eat, and their children are saying they should eat, and their grandchildren are saying they should eat, how can I eat? It's Yom Kippur. Please, Rabbi, tell me that I don't have to listen to my doctor. Please tell me that I don't have to listen to my children or my grandchildren. Please tell me that I could fast. Then you get to the lower than 50, and all of a sudden it's, Rabbi, I heard it's not so good for me to eat. I stubbed my toe yesterday. Maybe you could give me a kula. Maybe I heard that pregnant women, there's a danger and all kinds of things. I just don't think I should eat. My friends told me. I Googled that it's dangerous in this situation. Could I have a kula? There's an incredible difference between the younger generation and the older generation when it comes to fasting. And you could see it b'chush. You have no idea how many people in their 80s or 90s have told me, my doctor, my kids say that I have to fast. I'm a good faster. My kids, I'll start fasting, then we'll see what happens. Don't worry about it. Even when I approach them and say, you know what, because of your physical situation, I think you should maybe, whatever it is, Rabbi, don't worry about it. I've done this before. I've been doing it for the past 96 years. There's no reason why I can't do it for the next 96 years. You know, this is what reminds me of the Gemara that says, "Ma'ishna rishona disrachash lehunisa v'achronim lo nisrachash lanisa ilema." Because we have more Torah, because they have more Torah, that's why there's zochar nisa. And the Gemara says, "No, it's not because we have more Torah. We're much smarter than they, the older generation. Many of them didn't go to high school, Jewish high schools. Many of them didn't learn in Beis Medrash. Many of them can't learn up a Gemara and say a svara in a Rashba like you and I can, but." Rishonim, the Masr Nafshayu al Kiddush Hashem, they had a certain level of Mesiris Nefesh. They know what it means to be Masr Nefesh for Yiddishkeit. So them, you know, they're going to be Zocha to Nisim. We are very smart and well-educated, but unfortunately we don't have that visceral connection to Torah, to Yeshemai. So sometimes the younger generation are more apt to ask these questions. Okay, let's now get to the halachos. If you open up a Gemara or you open up a Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch says black on white, and this point can't be disputed, ubros, umenikos, misanos, that a pregnant woman and a nursing woman is supposed to fast on Yom Kippur. And that's the halacha. Now, it happens to be, if you would be an OBGYN and you were concerned for malpractice insurance, or you were concerned for the best outcome for your constituents, for your patients, of course, you'd probably say, hey, don't fast. Because you don't want to dehydrate, you don't want to, you know, and a lot of people hear that, hey, my doctor said I shouldn't fast on Yom Kippur. And that's what many doctors will say to their patients. That's not what the Shulchan Aruch says. The Shulchan Aruch says ubros should fast. Now, obviously, we're going to find soon that there will be exceptions in specific circumstances. But as a general rule, we will explain why we were going to follow what the Shulchan Aruch says, despite the Googling that many of your newlywed and first or second time pregnant women in your shul will be nervous otherwise. Now, the one thing that's very important to know is that in Hilchos Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos is a gigantic machlokas rishonim. If there is Pikuach Nefesh, if you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh of a fetus. So this is machlokas. The Ramban quotes the Bahag. The Bahag holds that your mechal Shabbos, even for a fetus, why? Based on the svara of mutav shichal of Shabbos achas kadesh yishma haShabbos is harbe. Even though this fetus is only a few, we'll talk about, is only a few months old, but if it is allowed to go to term and Bezes Hashem will be born, it will be shomer Shabbos for Bezes Hashem another 70, 80, 90, 120 years. So mutav shichal of Shabbos achas va'al, and so that it could be shomer Shabbos is harbe. That rule. Oh, so the Bahag is quoted as saying that. There are many Rishonim who argue on that Bahag. We paskin like the Bahag. That means we are Mekel, and we paskin like the Bahag, and we are Mechalel Shabbos to save an Uber. So for example, let's say in front of your shul, there's a terrible car accident. A pregnant woman is killed. Not from your shul. Pregnant woman driving on her motorcycle is killed. The ambulance comes and discovers that even though she's dead, her baby is still viable. They will drive her to the hospital on Shabbos and violate Yisurim Daraisa, and they'll cut the mother open to retrieve the baby because we pass like the Bahag, that you mechal Shabbos midaraisa to save an Uber. Now, just like that's true when it comes to Chilul Shabbos, the same is true when it comes to eating on Yom Kippur. When we are worried about a pregnant woman, as we'll see certain situations, very specific situations, that we do have to have a woman drink or eat on Yom Kippur, it's usually drink. Eating is rarely an issue, except when it comes to diabetics. the issue on Yom Kippur is almost always drinking and dehydration. Even if we find that we are not worried about the mother's health, we will still be concerned with the health and the viability of the unborn fetus. And it would be, just like we're Mechal Shabbos, Halach L'maisa, so too, like the Bahag, we would eat on Yom Kippur to save a fetus. Now, there's a second question within the Bahag who says that you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos, and therefore we're extending it also to eat on Yom Kippur to save a fetus. What about if it's less than 40 days old? You should know that I think the Ramban himself makes this point, or others make this point, that the Bahag is mashma that even less than 40 days old, you still have the svara of Sheichal Shabbos Achas Vishma Shabbos Tarbe. I don't care if this fetus is 7 months gestation or at 2 weeks of gestation. The fact that it's 2 weeks, but in another 8.5 months, it's going to be able to become Shomer Shabbos or whatever. It has to grow up a little bit to become Shomer Shabbos. But even though it's only a one-week-old fetus, a two-week-old fetus, even less than 40 days, the halacha, and this is how we paskin, you will be mechal Shabbos for a fetus even less than 40 days. And in our context, you will drink, if necessary, to save the life of the fetus, even if it is less than 40 days. But what are the situations when there is indeed a risk to a fetus or to the mother? That we're going to see in just a few minutes. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam she'nachal nei b'dvaro. Okay, there was a dayan on the Badatz by the name of Dayan Yaakov Yisrael Fisher. Some of you might have heard of his brother, Rib Shlomo Fisher, who's Rosh Yeshiva at Itri. You might have heard him speak, you might have met him, heard of him. Yerubayim certainly have possibly interacted with him. Well, his older brother, Dayan Yaakov Yisrael Fisher, was on the Badatz. And before fast days, specifically before Yom Kippur, he had a line that was blocks and blocks and blocks long, because all the women of Yerushalayim wanted to go to ask their shilas to him. You could only figure out why. The reason why there were blocks and blocks of a line outside of the Badatz's Beis Hara, specifically when Dayan Fisher was sitting in the Beis Hara, in the Badatz's Beis Hara, is because on the Haskama to the Sefer Pnei Baruch is a Sefer in Hilchas Avelos that you are familiar with, even though you might not have heard of it. Why? Because the Pnei Baruch has been translated into English, into the famous Morning in Halacha, the Art Scroll English. That's the Pnei Baruch. So on the Hebrew version of Pnei Baruch, there's a Haskama from Dayan Fisher. Dayan Fisher writes the following. I think I might have the text in the Mar Makomos that I sent out. I think I have the text. Yeah, let me tell you the text of Dayan Fisher, because we are going to critique his words point by point with at least three critiques. Dayan Fisher says in the Haskama to Pnei Baruch, Kayom Hazad, nowadays, Nechleshu Hadoros, we're weaker, we're less hardy physically. Va'asros Rabos, many tens, we'll call it dozens, Shal Nashim, there are dozens of women who are Mapilos Ayde Hatainis, who have stillbirths, or have, what's it called, lose their babies, Ayde Hatainis. Therefore, says Dayan Fisher, Tzrichen Kol Hanashim HaMubaros, all pregnant women, ad ha-chodesh ha-tshi, until they get to the ninth month when, okay, let them have a baby. Since the women could lose their babies, could have miscarriages, all pregnant women should eat on Yom Kippur, of course, pachos mikashir. We'll talk about how much a shir is later, but pachos mikashir, all pregnant women should eat. Now, you can imagine why he had a long line, because of that psak. Now, the poskim have pe'echad, all rejected Dayan Fisher's suggestion, and there are a few reasons why. So the Tzitz Eliezer and Chalek Yud Zayin, the Tzitz Eliezer, of course, is the great of Eliezer Waldenberg, who was the Rav of Shari Tzedek, and one of the preeminent poskim in medical halacha. Apparently, when the first chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, Herzog, I think is the first chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, he had a kolel in Yerushalayim. Of all the young rising stars, he had Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach, a young man named Shlomo Zalman Orbach, a young man named Yosef Shalom Yashiv, a young man named Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, a young man named Eliezer Waldenberg, a young man named Bezalel Jolti, and this was this little chevra of Reb Herzog Kolel that he had in Yerushalayim. Every one of them became among the Gedolei Hadar. Those are all names that you know. So the Tzitz Eliezer, and apparently when he the way he paskid shilas, all the volumes of Tzitz Eliezer was the following. He davened mincha, I think, in Shari Tzedek Hospital. Shari Tzedek Hospital then was not where it is now. It was opposite the Tachana Merkazit, a block or two on Rehov Yafo, a block or two closer to town, opposite the Tachana Merkazit. That's where the old Shari Tzedek Hospital was. He davened mincha there. Or Shachris, I don't remember. So what would happen is, when he'd go to shul in the morning, somebody would bring to him a shaila after Shachris. He'd go home, and at mincha, he would come back and he'd give the person, you know, the four pages that he'd written about, you know, the shaila that was asked by a doctor that morning. That's what I think I heard. That's how he worked from Rabbi Avraham Steinberg, who wrote that Encyclopedia Refuit. That's how the Tzitz Eliezer got written. So the Tzitz Eliezer deals with this tshuva of Diane Fish, this point that Diane Fisher made, which you could see Yosef Katan put it in the top of the second page of the sources that I sent out. He says, number one, you claim that Nechleshu Hadoros, that nowadays we're much weaker. That's hard to imagine. Our women are probably much more, we probably have much better nutrition, we probably have much better health than the women of many years ago. Number two, you say that you have tens of women who have miscarried because of fasting. So first of all, based on, there is not so much data, but we have data from Ramadan in the Muslim countries, and we have when they fast, and we have some data from Shari Tzedek, where in Yerushalayim, which is a religious hospital and caters to a population that fasts, there are a number of studies, at least two, maybe more, and they are basically, there's a statistically insignificant change of women giving birth early, right? We're worried that a woman will give birth before she's supposed to, preterm labor. So there's no statistical significance in that. There might be a tiny bit of increase in women who are in the 39th or 40th week who might give birth right after Yom Kippur, but that's at the end of term. So there's not really a sakana in that. Therefore, the medical profession has not concluded necessarily that it's dangerous to fast. Is there a question? Yes. Is it something that is what to be discussed? You know, there has not been any medical research that I'm aware of, or that, again, much of the shiurim that I'm giving right now is based on Rabbi Yaakov Neuberger, who, you know, has given the shiur for many years. Based on the research that we have, there is no significant indication that there's danger. It could be once in a while, there could be a higher risk of giving birth, shroom, but not preterm labor in a way that's dangerous. And therefore, well, how could you say that there's any problem and all women should eat if statistically we don't know of any risk? In fact, whatever risk we have now, that same risk existed in the time of Chazal. And if you think of this, Diane Fisher, you're saying that there were dozens of people who miscarried? Well, maybe those dozens of people who miscarried in your 50 years, passing for thousands of, you know, whatever, women of Yerushalayim, many of those were in high-risk situations who should not have fasted anyway in the first place. Furthermore, you say that there are tens of women who miscarried? Well, if there are thousands and tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of pregnant women who fast, and there happen to be a few dozen who have miscarried, maybe that's not even called a Sfek Sfeika. We know that you're a Michal Shabbos, Pikach Nefesh, even Sfek Sfek Sfeika. But maybe no one says you're not allowed to cross the street on a Tuesday morning. Oh, there's a, you know, that one out of 10 million people across the street get hit by a car. No one says that therefore it's usher to cross the street. So if there's a tiny, 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 tiny mortality rate, that might not even reach the threshold of a suffix for which we change halacha. Finally, you want to say nishtanu hateva? Excuse me, but if the Shulchan Aruch, from the time of the Mishnah till the Shulchan Aruch, until today, no one ever questioned and suggested nishtanu hateva, and you as an individual are going to get up, with all due respect to the Gaivit of Yerushalayim, of the Badatz, but you're going to declare an Ishtana HaTeva against the Mishnah, against the Shulchan Aruch, because of, without a Kibbutz Chachamim, without an agreement of many of the Gedolim, and therefore the Poskim were very strong to reject this Kula of Diane Fisher, for these various reasons. In fact, to the extent that Rabbi Avadia, when he discusses this halacha, he doesn't even quote it in the context of Yom Kippur. He only quotes it, and even on Tishvav, he says this kula is too much to be, you know, to rely on. So this shita of Diane Fisher that anyone who does their, you know, women today when they ask shilas, they often do their Google search first, so they could tell you that, you know, I once got a shila about keeping 2 days yontif, I think. And a woman says, you know, can I keep 1 or 2 days yontif? And I said, you know, well, I think the minhag is to keep 2 days. And then she sends me, are you familiar with the opinion of the Chacham Tzvi? And she sends me a quote in English of the Chacham Tzvi. I said, that's fascinating. Have you ever heard of somebody named the Chacham Tzvi before you Googled this shila? Did you ever hear of the Chacham Tzvi? Do you know any other shitas of the Chacham Tzvi? No, but people Google before they ask shilas, so you have to at least be aware that yes, if somebody Googles this, they might find this, but this shita which did exist, has been rejected by the vast majority of the poskim. Okay, now, that doesn't mean, what I'm trying to say is that when there's a normal pregnancy, a pregnant woman should fast. But many doctors will tell their patients, you're pregnant, you shouldn't fast. So she's going to come to you and say, my doctor said I shouldn't fast. So what you have to clarify is not who's right, me or the doctor, the Shulchan Aruch or the doctor, you know, that's not the way we ask. What we assume is the following. If it's a normal, healthy pregnancy, Baruch Hashem, many pregnant women have done this before and will continue to do this, Ad L'Dari Doros, Ad B'Yos HaMashiach, and even then some. The question that we have to address is your specific pregnancy a pregnancy that carries with it a higher risk than other pregnancies, which means you're not in the general rule of Ubros, of the Dina de Gemara, the Dina of the Shulchan Aruch, that Ubros and Menikos are supposed to fast. So if you have a specific situation, then okay, that's a totally different story. Then we can have a conversation. So it's better, you know, sometimes they just, as my doctor said, can I talk to the doctor? You'll call the doctor, and the doctor says, I don't think pregnant women should fast. So that's going to be a conversation. It's not really going to get anywhere. What you have to do is ask the doctor very specific questions. You say, is this woman under any specific risk? Now, it happens to be that nowadays we have such incredible science and technology that there's almost every pregnancy has some, you know, the doctor could find something questionable with, you know, any and every pregnancy came out. So you have to say, is this person's specific medical condition such that there's an elevated risk that will be affected by not drinking, that there's a risk of falling into preterm labor, which is really what we're most worried about, that because the body's getting dehydrated, the body will push out the baby, and she'll go into labor earlier than she should. That's going to be the nature of the conversation that you have to have with your doctor, with the woman's doctor, if she does have a specific issue. Okay, what we're going to do now is we're going to specify a number of circumstances where a woman who is pregnant and has some very specific matzav, we'll call it, that might warrant that she could eat on Yom Kippur. Now, again, when I say eat, almost always is the shaila relating to drinking. Eating on Yom Kippur on fast days is almost never necessary, again, unless you deal with a diabetic who has sugar issues, but that's, you know, a different, you know, has to be dealt with separately based on their doctor's orders and the nature of their diabetes. But other than diabetics, almost always the issue with fasting has nothing to do with food. If somebody tells you, I had a shiloh, a woman says, if I don't eat a granola bar, I'm going to die. Okay, so I spoke to a number of doctors. You know what he said? You know what they said? I don't want to tell you. they said she shouldn't eat granola bars. Let's just say it like that. The issue is always fasting. The issue is always drinking. The issue is hydration. Now, when are we concerned that a pregnant woman, might be demonstrating hydration, which would warrant her drinking? Now, again, how to drink? We'll talk about how to drink later. But let's go through a number of scenarios. Number one, if a woman had 2 previous miscarriages, this is already something that the Rishonim mentioned. If a woman had 2 previous miscarriages that were undiagnosed, meaning if a woman fell down the steps and had a miscarriage, that doesn't count. If a woman had 2 undiagnosed miscarriages, stam, or there was one miscarriage that there's reason to assume it had to do with dehydration, so then she shouldn't be fasting. Then you go to the doctor and say, given this situation, Do you think the woman could have just little bits of liquid at various intervals, which we'll talk about later, at dushiurim, or does she have to, you know, drink fully and regularly? And that's a conversation you'll have with the doctor. You know, if the miscarriages were related to something very specific, like there was a chromosomal abnormality, some genetic defect, and that's why that baby died, nothing to do with, you know, drinking. So that, again, would be just like, you know, she lost her baby because she fell down the steps or was hit by a car. That's not going to shed light on this issue. Next reason to allow a woman to drink is if there's, whatever her situation is, she's at a risk for a preterm delivery. Maybe, you know, this is her third baby. The first baby came out 2 months early. The second baby came out, you know, a month and a half early. And this is her third pregnancy. So based on previous pregnancies, the doctor could say, this woman is at a certain level of risk for preterm delivery. And if it's preterm labor, that could be dangerous because if the lungs aren't sufficiently developed, for example, or whatever else is not sufficiently developed in the baby, and they come out a month or 2 months before they should be, before they're fully cooked. You know, it's like taking out a chocolate cake before it's fully cooked. You don't want to do that. So again, you have to discuss that with the doctor. Another nikuda would be that if a woman on Yom Kippur is demonstrating signs of dehydration. Now here I want to make an important point, and that is that dehydration is considered pikuach nefesh for any and all human beings, not pregnant women, not nursing women only. Any and all human beings who are in a situation of dehydration are at risk of dying. Now, there are obviously many levels of dehydration. You're a little thirsty, you're a lot thirsty, you're a little dehydrated, you're sort of dehydrated, you're really dehydrated, you need to get an IV and go to the hospital because you're dehydrated. So everybody's a little thirsty, everybody's a lot thirsty. That were, of course. But let's say a woman becomes somebody, let's not talk about a pregnant woman, let's talk about any person. A person becomes dehydrated. So if a person shows significant signs of dehydration, then anyone might have to drink. What sort of signs of dehydration? Well, it starts with, of course, the urine, instead of being yellow, clear, or when the person's very liquefied or yellow, but it turns into amber, brown or amber. A person has a very bad headache that's more than a regular headache, that's like a dehydration headache. If those are early signs of dehydration, that might warrant somebody to, certainly a pregnant woman, to drink little bits. Now, there are more significant signs of dehydration that if a pregnant woman would have, we'd say drink fully. Heart palpitations, that's one. Dizziness, in a way that even when they're lying down, they're dizzy. If you stand up and you get dizzy, so I have a very interesting thing to tell you. Don't stand up and you won't get dizzy. But if you are dizzy even when you're lying down, or if a person's, you know, confused, they're mentally confused because of their, whatever their situation, that also could be an indication of more severe dehydration. If they don't have any fetal movement, let's say there's been no fetal movement for the past 3 hours, so in such a case, you would definitely go to drinking. Again, if it's a more severe dehydration, you drink full amounts. If it's at the beginning stages of a potential dehydration, that, you know, the brown and amber urine with a headache, then you'd start with shiurim. When we talk about dehydrating, there's a shaila that I often get, not from the pregnant women, but from their husbands. Their husband comes and says like something like this: "Hi, Rabbi Orlian, or Rabbi, you know, Mermelstein, or Sherganoff, Weinger, whatever your name is. Hello, Rabbi. My wife is pregnant, and since the shul where I'm davening at is like 25-minute walk, my wife wants to know if she could drink, because it's a long walk." It's something like that. So the first thing I say is, I think the shaila that you asked me was asked wrong. The shaila that I think you asked me was supposed to be, "Rabbi Orlian, my wife is pregnant. Can I, the husband, go to shul, or do I have to stay home and take care of my wife?" That's, I think, what you meant to ask me. Then they look at me with their eyes wide open and their jaw drops, and I smile at them and say, yes, that's what the poskim say. So the poskim say, and this is the Chasam Sofer, Chelek Vav, Shas Chuvas Chelek Vav, Likutim Chav Gimel, the Chasam Sofer says, and this also is in the source sheets, the Chasam Sofer says that it's more important that the husband stay home, especially when they have, you know, oftentimes it's when they already have a kid or two at home. You know, she has to watch the kids. She's not, it's going to be very hard to fast. Could she have a kula and not fast? Because it's going to be very hard to watch the kids. The answer is, you stay home, you watch the kids, and your wife is going to lie down on an air-conditioned couch and not move for 25 hours while you run around watching the kids. If you get some davening in, I'm happy for you. If you don't, that's also fine. That's not, don't worry about davening. The Chasam Sofer says explicitly, Shlomo Zalman also says this, that the point of Yom Kippur is Ta'anu Es Nafshei Seichem. That's far more important than going to shul, as important as it is to daven with the minyan, as beautiful as it is to daven with the minyan, as much as Hashem listens to tefillah in a shul and in the minyan and all the things of the avoda and the shliach tzibur, and the Rav has a shtickl Torah about tefillas hatzibur, and the shliach tzibur is like the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. Okay, guess what? The Kohen Gadol did his avoda in Yom Kippur, and many people were in their homes somewhere else, not in Yerushalayim, watching the Kohen Gadol do his avoda. So you don't have to watch the shliach tzibur bow down at in Musaf. You could stay home. And again, this is the most important conversation that I have with women before Yom Kippur, is that you have to, and for women who are newlyweds, and this is their first pregnancy, it's very difficult to tell them, especially if they had they went to Jewish day schools, their idea of what Avodas Hashem means, and all of a sudden you're saying that you should stay home and lie on a couch all day. I had a woman tell me the following. This is Masha Maisa Shahaya. She said, I think she was pregnant or whatever else. I said, well, your Yom Kippur should be lying on a bed, lying on a couch in the air conditioning for 25 hours. She said, Rabbi Orlean, what you're telling me is against everything that I ever learned in my entire Jewish day school career. So what should I tell her? I just tell her, I guess the day school that you went to didn't get up to the Chasam Sofer, I suppose. But that's the Metzias. That's the Metzias. Now, so when you have these Shilas, you have to talk very gently, very calmly, very slowly, and say it's so important and it's so beautiful that you like going to shul. You're in a new stage of life now, and then Baruch Hashem, it's a beautiful thing. You're building a family, building the next generation of Klal Yisrael, and there's been now going to be a switch in the nature of your Avodas Hashem. Until now, your Avodas Hashem was in one type of Avodas Hashem. Now that you're becoming a mother, Baruch Hashem, your Avodas Hashem has shifted. The most important thing that you could do is make sure that you don't eat, that you're able to fast and do whatever you need to do, including your husband staying home and helping out, so that you don't have to break your fast at all. That's, again, Mefurish in the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer is talking about that he had the cholera epidemic. The Chasam Sofer is medayik in the doctor's language. The doctors in the time of the cholera epidemics in the early 1800s, the doctors said that anyone who would go outside would be at risk of contracting. Everyone who would go outside on an empty stomach would be at risk of contracting cholera. If you're fasting, you have a high risk of contracting cholera. So the shaila was, are you allowed to eat? What was the Chasam Sofer? He was medayik. The doctor says, if you go outside on an empty stomach, you have a high risk of contracting cholera. So the answer is, don't go outside. The answer is not to eat. The answer is stay home and don't go outside. That's the Chasam Sofer. So that's, again, halacha lemaisa, very important to realize as you build your families and also as you are a guide your young pregnant women in your shul. Now, this point that I'm making is a very serious point, because let's say a woman says, you know what, I'm pregnant, but I'm strong. I could go Friday night, I could go Yom Kippur night to Kol Nidre, I could go to Shacharis, then for Musaf I'll stay home. And if I have to, I'll break my fast, because, you know, no. If Rav Shlomo Zalman and many of the poskim say, if you're going to have one more Pachos mikashir, which we're going to talk about later, because you exercised, that one more pachos mikashir that you could have avoided by staying in bed and not going to Kol Nidre the night before or Shacharis in the morning, this way that would prevent you from having one extra shir later in the day, that's what you should have done. You should stay home. You have this also with very, very elderly people who are not strong. Sometimes they say, no, I'm going to go to shul, and if I feel weak, I'll drink later in the day. Again, it's hard to, you know, sometimes explain this point to them, but it's better that they don't put themselves in a situation that they might have to drink a little bit later in the day. And even if they're going to have to drink, still if they could only have to drink six times and they're going to drink a seventh time because they exerted themselves, that was wrong. They shouldn't exert themselves to make them have to drink a seventh pachas mikashir when they could have gotten away without exerting themselves, drinking only six pachas mikashirs. Okay, so that's, I went on a little bit of a tangent discussing dehydration. Obviously, sometimes you have women. I was once on at a summer program for beginners for the JSS program. We had a young lady on our program who was very, 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 very small, like very petite, very tiny, tiny young lady. And we would take the group to Yad Vashem on Tisha B'Av, because it's a great thing to do. Tisha B'Av after Chatzos, that was our trip every year to Yad Vashem. So it's Tisha B'Av, we're at Yad Vashem, and you know, this girl on our tour, you know, we're right outside, we just about finished most of the program, walking outside, and she collapses on the floor, she faints, and in the conversations afterwards about, you know, should she be fasting, should she not have fasted, you know, she said, oh yeah, I can never fast. So I said, so why did you fast? He said, well, you told us that Tisha B'Av you're supposed to fast. So I fasted. Yeah, but if you have a history of dehydrating, even when you're not, even not on fast days, you have a dehydration issue. So that again, so if we have a pregnant woman who has a risk of dehydration, even when it's not a fast day, certainly such a woman would be at a higher risk for dehydration on a fast day. Now, let's go to the next point. The next factor which might warrant a woman to drink is on Yom Kippur is if she has early bleeding. Meaning, this could be like 3 days before Yom Kippur she was bleeding. That's not good. When a woman who's pregnant is bleeding, that could be a problem. So presumably she checked it out either at the emergency room or with a doctor, and the doctor will say, okay, you know, nothing to worry about. Or the doctor will say, you're a little bit at risk, we need you to keep whatever, so you have to talk to the doctor. Is the fact that she was bleeding, or if she bleeds on Yom Kippur and you can't reach the doctor, then you should probably also err on the side of caution. And you don't want to have early labor, because early bleeding could indicate that the labor is going to start. And if it's not, if it's very early, that could be a very high risk. So you want to protect her in that situation.
Yes.
Yes.
For early bleeding, if it's during the 9th month, though, is that also like the same factor, or like ninth month?
So once she's in the 9th month, what's going to be the problem? She'll give birth. Good.
Okay.
Again, I'm not a doctor, and I'm not going to claim to be a doctor. But based on what I understand, we're not so concerned if she goes into, you know, like when I was mentioning that there are no statistical risks of fasting on Yom Kippur. There is a study that did say that there are women in their 9th month, when they're almost about to give birth, do give birth at a little bit of a higher rate the day after Yom Kippur. But only for women who are already at ready to give birth. So it's not a danger. So it's true that it could precipitate, you know, birth if there is no drinking, but not in a way that's dangerous. And only for women who are already, you know, only for babies who are already fully cooked. You know, it's, okay, so it's not going to become... It's not going to become, what's it called, the Mitztag V'Yafala. It'll just be Mevushal Kol Tzarko. Okay, Mevushal Kol Tzarko will be fine. Now, we have an interesting question. Let's say she's in her 9th month, like Sam just raised, and it's Yom Kippur, and she starts feeling labor pains. So let's think for a second. If she starts feeling labor pains, so maybe she's giving birth. Okay, so why do you want her to drink to prevent her from giving birth? She's in her 9th month and she's going to labor, so great, let her go into labor. So that's what Diane Fisher, who said very leniently earlier that every pregnant woman should be eating, he said until the 9th month, because once you're in the 9th month, okay, you start having a baby, good, have your baby, mazel tov, don't drink. But if Nevinsel says, wait a second, some other poskim say, wait a second, if the woman is about to give birth, she's going to need, you know, the woman who's giving birth, the contraction, she could sweat, she could lose liquids, she's going to need the strength to give, you know, to go through the labor process, the very painful labor process that women have to endure. So he says you should drink to, not like Diane Fisher, or Nevinsel says you should drink so you have the strength and the health and the liquids to that you need for birth itself. So Rabbi Neuberger liked to say sort of a pshara. He says, when would this happen? Let's say it happens, Suda Hamafsekes was at 6 p.m. Kol Nidre was at 7 p.m. She starts having, you know, labor contractions, you know, in the middle of, you know, right after you get home from Maariv at 9:30 p.m. She just drank. She just had a whole sudas hamafsekas. So she, don't worry about her. She's fine. In terms of drinking more. On the other hand, let's say it's already 4:30, a quarter to five. You're, you know, towards the end of Mincha, in the middle of Haftorah Yonah, you get a message from your wife that she's starting to have labor pain. She's starting to have contractions. She hasn't drunk in, you know, 20 hours. From 6 p.m. the day before until 5 p.m. the next day, it's, 23 hours. So there, Rabbi Neuberger would be maker later in the day to eat regularly because the Sudam HaSek is already, you know, is no longer giving her the hydration that she needs now. So that Rabbi Neuberger would be maker later in the day. Okay. Now, what I'd like to do is talk about Pachas Mikashir. We know that halacha is that when a person is a chole is a chole, so machilin aso hakal hakal tchila. And hakal hakal tchila means that you should do, instead of a full shir, what's the shir this we should have started with? What's the shir achila when it comes to Yom Kippur? So although typically we have a kezias and revius as the shir of achilas, that's not the case when it comes to Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur is not an isra achila. Yom Kippur is a chiyuv inui, of course. And therefore, even if you would drink a revius, well, let me not say that. Even if you would eat a kezias, you would still be hungry. You might have done a ma'is achila, but you still did not do an inui. You still are not the opposite of mu'una. You're still not satiated. And therefore, it's kusevis hagasa, a large date, and the shear of liquids, which is more important for us, again, because most of our shahs are going to relate to the hydration, is malo lokmav. How much is malo lokmav? So, in other words, when you have a chola, who we discussed numerous cases or other cases of a chola, who do need to drink. And the doctor says they don't have to drink large amounts as long as they get some liquid in regularly. So at intervals. So what are the size of the quantities that they're going to have at intervals? So before we get to the time intervals, how much is the quantity? So a malo logmav, the Mishnah Berurah says you do the following. I'm not going to give you a number. I'm not going to tell you how many ounces. You do the following experiment and don't wait till Yom Kippur. If you know somebody has a medical situation or a pregnant woman calls you 3 days before Yom Kippur, you should teach her the following. 2 days, 3 days before Yom Kippur, take a cup, take a measuring cup, fill your mouth with water so that both of your cheeks are ballooned. Look at me. Spit out all of the liquid that ballooned your cheeks, both of your cheeks, into the cup. Let's say it ended up being 4 ounces. Cut that in half. That will be what one cheekful is. Now, the reason why I'm saying it like this, the reason why the Shabbat says it like this, because one cheekful doesn't just mean one cheek's volume, it's also one cheek and the middle and the half of your mouth, the half of the inner mouth, the central mouth cavity. So that's why you fill both of your cheeks with the whole middle mouth cavity, and then you spit it and divide it in two. That will give you, you know, the middle of your mouth until the extended protruded cheek, and that will give you your shear. Now, the reason why I think you should do this is because you will usually get a more lenient shear if you measure beforehand. It will usually be larger. If they didn't measure beforehand, then I usually tell people 1.5 ounces is a malo logmav. If they would measure, they might be able to get 1.8, 2, 2.2. If they have big cheeks, they could get maybe, you know, 2.5 ounces for their pachas mikashir. But if they didn't, then we'll be on the safe side and say 1.5 ounces. Now, when it comes to food is a koseves hagasa. How big is that? Well, it's bigger than a kezias. A kezias is whatever a kezias is, bigger than that. I think, I don't know if they say 30 cc's. I'm not good at my cc's. You could look it up at some point and figure out how much a koseves is according to, you know, Rav Chaim Noah and Igros Moshe and the Chazon Ish, and you'll work accordingly. But basically, practically, what I tell is a shot glass of food, if they have to have food, you have it, fill a shot glass, there are 2 ounce shot glasses, I'm not talking about that. A 1 ounce shot glass, the small schnapps cups that most shuls have at their kiddush, that's what we're talking about, and 1.5 ounces of juice, 1.5 ounces of liquid. Now, once you're having liquid, the poskim say that it's better, you might as well, if you're going to have 1 ounce of liquid, why do water when you could have grape juice? Grape juice doesn't work on Tisha B'Av, but it works on Yom Kippur. You could have grape juice on Yom Kippur. You could have orange juice on Yom Kippur. You could have if you have an elderly person who has a problem with nutrition, again, then they might have to eat anyway, but you could give them Ensure, a protein shake. Give them an ounce. If they have, the doctor says they have to hydrate themselves, so give them an ounce of a protein shake, a chocolate or a vanilla flavored, or who knows, a butterscotch flavored protein shake, so that they're getting nutrients, they're getting calories, and they're getting the hydration that they need. Okay, that's as far as the volumetric quantity. What about the time? So the Chasam Sofer writes that 9 minutes is definitely good. So what that means is that if you have a person who has to drink something on Yom Kippur, if they have to eat, if they don't need to have large amounts of food, and you could split it up into small amounts, so they should have 1.5 ounces of juice every 9 minutes. Which means if they do that for an hour, they're going to have 1.5 times, you know, 6 times an hour. You're getting a full 8 ounce cup every hour. You're getting plenty of hydration. Now, this conversation is very important to have. I had a shaila on Yom Kippur night 3 years ago. A guy, and I'm sitting after Kol Nidre. I spoke at Kol Nidre. I come home. My kids will go to sleep. I'm sitting in my office. I get a knock on the door at 11 o'clock Yom Kippur night. A fellow comes into my house, and he comes in with a water bottle. He says, Rabbi Orlian, I want to clarify something. I heard that you said that even if somebody's a chola, and this is a very important point because it's one of the biggest misconceptions even among doctors, religious doctors, have the following misconception. They assume that if somebody's a little bit sick, you know, and they need to eat, so, okay, yeah, to drink a lot or eat a lot, to have a shir, then you have to chol sheyesh bo sakana. But if you're not chol sheyesh bo sakana, then you could have pachas mikashir. And that's wrong. That's absolutely wrong. The only one who's allowed to eat a kashir is someone who's a safik pikach nefesh. And the only one who's allowed to eat pachas mikashir is also somebody who is safik pikach nefesh. Why? Because less than a shir is still asur daraisa. There's machlokas, chatzishir asur min ha-Torah or not asur min ha-Torah, we paskin chatzishir asur min ha-Torah, and therefore it is an isur daraisa to have a small bite of a granola bar. It is an isur daraisa to have a very small sip of, you know, tiniest bit of water is an isur daraisa. We are matir an isur daraisa only if there is a safek pikuach nefesh at hand. If somebody feels absolutely miserable with the flu, absolutely miserable, and their throat is scratchy, and they're coughing, and they have a bad headache, if it's not a safek pikuach nefesh, they're not allowed to have an iota to drink, not an iota, even a pachas mikashir. Once it's a safek pikuach nefesh, then if they need to have a lot, then give them a lot. If they don't need a lot, they could get away. We could solve the safek pikuach nefesh with small amounts. We'll give them small amounts. So this guy told me that I have a kidney issue. My kidneys are 70% non-working and 30% of my kidneys work. And the doctors told me that that could change at any point in time. If they don't get enough hydration, there's a possibility that, you know, whatever working, you know, amount of my kidney could just, you know, I could live whatever remaining kidney function I have. So that's why I walk around with a water bottle. But what you just told me, Rabbi Orly, and you just you made an announcement in your shir or whatever before Yom Kippur or before Yom Kippur, you said that somebody who's in this situation should not just drink regularly, should drink a little bit. So you're telling me, and I said yes, that if I have to hide, I could just keep myself hydrated, which again, because of his kidney situation, he could drink an ounce every, you know, an ounce and a half every 10 minutes, and he could have plenty of hydration, and his kidneys will not be at risk at all, and he didn't have a shear, and he's not chayav kares. A person who would have a shear when they only could have a chatzi shear, and chatzi shear is sufficient, might be chayav kares. It's frightening. You as a rabbi have to be very careful. You don't want to freak people, your congregants out, but you have to, you know, figure out if they need a shear. If it's a suffix, then be mekel, fine. If there's a suffix, be mekel. Be machmir when it comes to pikuach nefesh and mekel and ilchas yom kippur, that's fine. But if it's clear that they do not need a shear and they could get away with a pachas mikashir, so if you would tell, if they would have a shear, that would be a chiyuv kares. Even if they're a cholish yesh bo sakana, but they could get away with a pachas mikashir, they would be, I don't want to say definitively the chayiv kares, but it is, they're playing with a chiyuv kares, and you have to be careful not to eat more than is necessary. And I mentioned before, if a person could have only 6 chatzai shir, and they have a 7th, again, there's no kares for a chatzai shir, but it would still be an issa daraisa to have that 7th chatzai shir if they could have gotten away with 6 chatzai shir. Now we have a question that could come up. Let's say if a person's in a situation, I had a fellow on Tisha B'Av. with a heart condition, and I spoke to the cardiologist. The cardiologist said, yeah, I have no problem if he drinks at intervals, 10-minute intervals, he could have a sip every 10 minutes, no problem, but he has to drink. But if he doesn't feel well, then I want him to just drink, you know, huge amounts. So when you have something like that on Yom Kippur, let's say you have a situation where you have two options. You could try to fast. Not like the case I just told you on your Tisha B'Av that I had on Tisha B'Av. Let's say you could try to fast. Maybe you'll make it the whole day. But if you get sick, you're going to have, or you get sick, whatever illness the person is dealing with, like a pregnant woman, she's going to try to fast. But if she shows a sign of dehydration, she's going to have to drink huge amounts. The doctor says if she shows a sign of dehydration in her situation, she can't just have an ounce every 10 minutes. She's going to have to drink 3 cups immediately. So then you have to figure out, Rabbi, are you going to say to do chatzi shir, chatzi shir, chatzi shir, chatzi shir, and bivadi drink on Yom Kippur? Or are you going to say, let's try, you have to be a little bit of a gambler. Let's try to not have to fast at all. But if she will end up breaking her fast, then she's going to drink a shear of a chi of kareis, a full shear. So the poskim say in this case, if there's a chance that the person will not have to eat at all and could make it through the fast without eating or drinking, you should try to gamble and go for not eating or drinking, because to eat or drink would be an issur d'oraisa. Once they're mechuyev to eat, let's say they do get sick and they do need to eat, okay, let them eat whatever they need to do, if that's what the doctor says. And therefore, it is better if you, again, if you have a choice, excuse me, between starting from the very beginning and bevade doing chatzi shir throughout the day, or trying to fast, and if it doesn't work, you're going to have a full shir. The answer is try to fast, and if it doesn't work, then you'll have to have the full shir. Okay. This point is from Shlomo Zalman, Rutsi Pesach Frank, Rav Osner, that even if there's an outside chance that she can make it through the day fasting, she should try to fast, and if need be, at that point, she will drink a lot. Now, there is a very interesting point that Shlomo Zalman mentioned, that the doctors told him that when a woman has fertility issues and went through artificial means of reproduction, like, I don't know exactly what he's talking about, let's assume IVF, in vitro fertilization, he was informed by the doctors that the beginning weeks of pregnancy are higher risk. It's greater possibility of losing the pregnancy in the first few weeks, I guess, while it's being implanted, shortly after implantation. After a few weeks, then it goes, it's basically the same level of risk of losing a pregnancy as anything else. But the first few weeks are very tenuous. So it could be if a woman asks you and you find out that it's an IVF implantation, that she's pregnant with an IVF situation, it could be there's room for her to drink and to in the first few weeks. Again, that's something that you have to see what the new research is. You have to inquire if that is the situation for the woman. If a woman says, you know, the best thing is, you know, from my experience, when a woman says, could I drink? You know, the doctor said I have to, you know, drink on Yom Kippur, I'm pregnant. So they say, oh, do you have diabetes? Oh, Baruch Hashem, no. Do you have high blood pressure? Oh, Baruch Hashem, no. Oh, so you don't have any complications? Then she starts feeling like, you know, oops. No, I don't have, thank God, I don't have any complications. Wow, what a bracha. You don't have any complications. Okay, so if that's the case, then, you know, just make her feel appreciative for the, you know, she thought she was, oh my gosh, I'm pregnant after drink. Now she's feeling like, Baruch Hashem, I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm not this, I'm not this. I'm only pregnant. So that just helps, you know, frame your psak when you have to give that psak. But again, in that conversation, if you find out that there's an IVF procedure that made her pregnant, then there might be more room for leniency. You have to do more research as to the risks involved. Now, when I told you the time interval is 9 minutes, that's what the Chasam Sofer says is definitely fine. However, oftentimes 9 minutes is a long time to wait. There are many other shitos that say basically everything else. If you can't wait 9 minutes, you could be, rely on other shitos to say only 6 or 7 minutes. If that's not enough, if that's too long an interval and you need to drink more than that, there are shittas to say 5 minutes. If that's too long an interval, there are shittas to say 4 minutes. There's some shittas who say that the amount of drinking is kadesh tiyas revius, which is, you know, watch me, I have my cup here, it could take me about 10 seconds. And therefore, if push comes to shove, tell them to have small sips, and even if they have to drink a lot at once, tell them to do it in small sips, so they do their their shiur in over 10 or 20 seconds. Even that would be helpful. So again, aim for 9 minutes if it's possible. If not, then try 7, try 6. And you can tell them, look, if you're dehydrated and you're pregnant, you're dehydrated. So when a woman calls me and she's pregnant, I always say, as things are, you should be fine. And Be'ez Hashem, I'll daven that you should be healthy. You'll daven you should be healthy. You won't have to break your fast. But if you do show one of the signs of dehydration, which I mentioned to you before, you will tell this woman, then you should try to drink. Let's, again, no fetal movement. So you'll have a cup of grape juice every 9 minutes. If you do that for a few times and still no fetal movement, so then you'll start drinking grape juice every 4 minutes, every 3 minutes. If you have to have a lot more, then do it every 20 seconds, every 30 seconds. But even that is better than one big, you know, cup at once, which would be a shear according to all the shittas. Fine. Everything we talked about now was about a pregnant woman. Now, let's shift to talk about a woman who already did give birth, a Yoledes, because the Shulchan Aruch also says that a Yoledes does not have to fast. So, there's actually no Gemara that says that a Yoledes doesn't have to fast, that a Yoledes is Petura from fasting, but there's a Gemara that says that you're Mechal Shabbos for a Yoledes. So just like you're Mechal Shabbos for a Yoledes, the Rishonim already assume, and the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that just like you're Mechal Shabbos for a Yoledes, so too a Yoledes does not have to fast. And the Shulchan Aruch presents it, like patterned after the Gemara who's talking about Chil Shabbos, that there are different stages. For the first 3 days, she should not fast. From 3 to 7, we ask her. And after 7 days from birth, she should fast. Now, when we say from birth, we mean from when the baby came out, not from when she started labor. So let's say you had a woman who was in labor for a day and a half. We don't say, oh, she has to fast, you know, a day and a half later. She has 3 days from the baby coming out that she doesn't fast. The poskim are actually mashma that she's not supposed to fast. The way this sugi is addressed in the poskim is, what happens if you're a woman who says, I gave birth, I feel fine, I want to fast on Yom Kippur, right? Like the older generation. I want to fast on Yom Kippur. Is she allowed to fast? That's the poskim discuss. But if she doesn't say, I want to fast, most girls now, most 25-year-old girls did not say, I want to fast. I just gave birth 2 days ago, I want to fast. You tell a girl, oh, you just gave birth, you don't have to fast. You're like, hooray, 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 hooray. She's going to be a fit. You're going to be her favorite rabbi. They're going to ask you all their shahs the rest of her life because you gave her a cool. She doesn't have to fast Yom Kippur. But the post can say, is she allowed to fast in the first 3 days? Maybe yes, maybe no. Should we force her to eat? Okay. But if she feels weak, then she doesn't have to, then she should not be eating. I'm sorry, she should not be fasting in the first 3 days. Between days 3 and 7, so it depends on how she feels. After 7 days, then she must fast like everybody else. Now, there's a gigantic machlokas rishonim how to measure those 3 days that a yoledes does eat. So, for example, is it 72 hours from when the baby was born? That could be very funny. You know why? Because if she has a baby 2.5 days before Yom Kippur, so she might have her 72 hours expire in the middle of like Unasana Tokef at Shachris. So like during the first, you know, during the first half of, you know, during Pesukah Dezimra, she's munching on, who knows what, she's having an ice cream sundae. And then right after Unasana Tokef, all of a sudden she has to fast for the next, you know, 7 hours and 42 minutes the rest of the day. It just comes out very funny. But there are Rishonim who do say that. Other Rishonim say no. The day that she gave birth, whatever time of the day, that's day one. Then there's day two. And day three is the next day until Shkia. So let's say, for example, Yom Kippur is Wednesday night. So she had a baby on Monday late afternoon. So Monday, the last few hours of Monday is already day one. Tuesday is day two, Wednesday is day three, and she has to start fasting for Yom Kippur. Even though really she only got, you know, 49 or 50 hours of leniency. Because she gave birth late in the day. Let's adjust it. Let's say she gave birth on Tuesday, at Tuesday morning. Tuesday morning, 9 a.m. she gave birth. So Tuesday is day one, Wednesday is day two, Yom Kippur is day three. We're not going to let her go, according to the second opinion, we're not going to let her go till 9 in the morning of Yom Kippur. That's the other opinion, the 72-hour opinion. We're going to say, you got all of Tuesday, you got all of Wednesday, and Yom Kippur is already going to be day three. You get until Yom Kippur starts. You don't get the entire you don't get Yom Kippur until 9 a.m. So she's going to end up not getting so much time. I might have made a mistake in my calculations. You look up the sugya. I might have made a mistake in my calculations, but you'll clarify that. You know, if you have this, again, you'll have this shaila in advance. A woman will call you, I just had a baby, and you'll have to clarify which psak we're going to follow. So in 2 hours or 3 days, I might have made a mistake in calculating the 3 days. Fine. Brian, are you asking a question?
Yeah. Does that sheet that make so much sense medically? We're talking about a big difference of like 20 hours, potentially, in terms of...
Medically... I'm not a doctor, but medically, if you ask a doctor, a woman gave birth. Is she right now, she gave birth already, the baby's, the labor was behind her. Is there any higher risk that she's in now because of having recently given birth? I don't know if they would say, yeah, she's at risk for anything right now. Unless a woman bled a lot when she gave birth and she lost a lot of liquid, that could be a different story. But then, you know, then even if she says she's allowed to eat, you know, then if she says any liquid, then she could eat till 7 days. So... again, the 7 days will also have the same machlokas. The same way there was a machlokas, how to calculate the 3 days, is it 3 times 24, or is it, you know, a little bit of this day, the middle day, and a little bit of the third day? The same machlokas applies to 7 days. So it might not always be a full 7 days, me'es la'es, that would be a machlokas. Now you should know, there's this kula, I'm not going to say a kula, because dina de Gemara, dina de Mishnah, dina de Shulchan Aruch, a yoledes doesn't have to fast, is true after a miscarriage also. A woman who has a miscarriage, even if she, is also a yoledes. From what I understand, it's only after 40 days. I mean, if a woman has a miscarriage, let's say, God forbid, she has a miscarriage in the middle of the first trimester, 3 months in, two and a half months in. So she might not have to, and it comes out, let's say, from her body, 2.5 months into her pregnancy. She might not have to fast for 3 days. That's something that you should clarify if that comes up. Obviously, after a cesarean section, life is a little more complicated, and you'll evaluate that separately. Okay, that was the second section. That was the halachas of yoledes. Now let's go to the last section of the shiur, which is the halachas of a woman who is nursing. So, what's the issue with nursing? The issue with nursing, and here it gets complicated because we have formula, is that nursing draws liquid out of a woman. And therefore, a woman's body is quite miraculous in that it takes the food, and as I understand, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a doctor, but as I understand, the one who first gets the nutrients and the hydration is the baby, and the mother gets what's left over. It's an incredible thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. It's not like the mother gets what she needs, and some of that goes to the baby. The baby is the first online in the woman's body to get its nutrients and its hydration, and whatever's left over goes to mother. That's what I understand. I could be totally wrong. But maybe that's by pregnant, not by nursing, I'm not sure. But okay, either way, the human body's incredible. What we're worried about is that a woman who's nursing is expending significant amounts of liquid, and it's like you're giving out liquid from your body. You're only taking in a certain amount of liquid. If you and your wife are both, well, she's nursing and you're not nursing, let's assume. And it's still relatively fair to assume that most men, not saying all, but most men do not nurse. So let's say you're married to a woman, she's nursing, you're not nursing. She's giving off, let's say she's nursing over the course of a 24-hour period, she could be giving off, 12, 16 ounces, 18 ounces of liquid. I don't know how many ounces over the course of a day. 20 ounces, 25 ounces of liquid, whatever the numbers are. And you, the same person, equivalent are you, the same weight, same height, same amount of drinking before Yom Kippur that you had at the Suda Masekes. But she had to give out, you know, all this liquid that you didn't. So, of course, she's going to become much more dehydrated. So, can a woman who's nursing drink on Yom Kippur? So, the Mishnah asks this question. The Shulchan Aruch asks this question. The Mishnah, the Shulchan Aruch says, Ubros umanikos misanos. Nursing women fast, just like a pregnant woman. So, Dina the Mishnah, is that a nursing woman should fast? That's what the Mishnah says. However, what are we worried about? We're worried about, obviously, the woman becoming dehydrated. We're also worried about the baby not getting what the baby needs. So when you speak to women who are pregnant or nursing, they're very worried about being able to continue to nurse. Because if a woman stops nursing for a certain amount of time, she could lose her ability to nurse. If she stops nursing for, it could be a day or two or three, she could lose her milk entirely. Especially if it's soon after birth, the first day or two or three, I don't know exactly how much, a woman gives off colostrum, which is very healthy for the baby to have, and that has a lot of immunity in it for the baby. And that colostrum, which is not really milk, it's before the milk, it's what comes out from the mother before the milk, is somewhat irreplaceable. So therefore, women are especially nervous about, you know, being able to feed their baby that they just had right before Yom Kippur because of the colostrum. So it happens to be all that we're not taking away from the importance of either of those factors, but those are not necessarily reasons that warrant a woman to violate the Issa D'oraisa of drinking the Issa Chiv Kares, or even if it's a Chatzshir, of drinking on Yom Kippur. Why? Because we have something called formula. And Baruch Hashem, we live in a generation where you have formula, which is not, and I'm not going to say it's as good as milk. No question, it's not as good as milk. Milk, breast milk is still the best thing to give a baby. But because we have something that is suitable to replace, I don't want to say, I'm scared to say replace, but is suitable to provide a baby's needs, not as well, but it is suitable. Therefore, a woman would, under normal circumstances, would not have the heter, as the Mishnah and the Shulchan Aruch Paskin, to drink because they want to make sure they have milk. Now, what happens if you have the aligning of many, 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 many issues all at once? So, for example, let's say the baby will not drink formula. So when a woman calls me who's nursing, and she called me a few days before Yom Kippur, I tell her, you have 3 days, you have 6 days, you have 9 days, you have 3 weeks. Practice giving the baby formula. I don't want to give the baby formula. I understand that, but I understand you don't want to give your baby formula. So once a day, let your baby practice. There are two issues. There's the taste of the formula, which is different than the mother's milk, and there's the baby ability to use a bottle, the nipple of a bottle, as opposed to the woman's body. And those are both different factors, and the baby might have a problem with either of those issues. So you have to let the baby practice using a bottle instead of the mother herself, and get used to the flavor. Do it once a day, every day for the 3 days before Yom Kippur, for 4 days before Yom Kippur, practice. But sometimes they call you Erev Yom Kippur, you know, again during the Suda HaMafsekes. That always happens. So if you have a situation where a baby will not, cannot, does not take formula, you try. She says, I'm trying. You know, their husband comes over to you during Shachas. My wife tried to give the baby, you know, formula. And the baby, last night she tried 4 times. This morning she tried 3 times with a bottle. Baby's not sucking on the bottle. So baby's not taking formula. And the mother has already expended. The mother doesn't have any milk, because she hasn't been drinking, right? It's not going to happen at Kol Nidre night. It might not even happen in the morning. Maybe in the middle of the day, later in the day, she doesn't have any milk anymore because she's already starting to get a little low on liquids. And the baby's getting aggravated. And you still have a good bunch of hours till the end of the fast, right? Let's say they come to ask you the Shaila, you know, right before Ne'ilah. So you know what you say? So you wait 45 minutes. The baby will cry for 45 minutes. We don't want babies to cry. We love our babies. But if the baby doesn't eat for the next 45 minutes and cries, as painful and terrible as it is, that's not going to warrant being violating an Issa D'oraisa. So if you have, again, these various factors, really you should try to give the baby formula. You should train it beforehand. Really, the mother should nurse. Maybe she could nurse. Maybe she will have enough liquid to nurse. She should nurse. If she can't nurse, she could split. You know, first she'll nurse, then she'll give formula. Nurse, formula, nurse, formula. So she'll still have liquid for herself. So if you have, again, baby's not taking formula, the mother doesn't have any milk left, the baby is crying, and you still have a whole bunch of hours left till the end of the fast, that would be the single situation where we'd permit a nursing mother to drink. Or, if the baby has very significant health issues, I've had this, let's say the baby has a health issue and not gaining weight and has problems with the gastro system, so it needs its mother's milk. Okay, fine. So it needs its mother's milk, and the mother has to have milk, and because of the baby's delicate health, so then the mother has to have the milk for the baby and might have to drink as the day progresses. There is a legend, an apocryphal legend of the Chazon Ish, based on the Gemara. The Gemara says that Shinui Me'ayim is a sakana for the Vlad. So based on that Chazon Ish, based on that Gemara, that Shinui Me'ayin, changing of the food system, food and intestinal stuff, is a sakana for a Vlad, the Chazon Ish is allegedly has reported to have said that if a baby never had formula and you're going to introduce formula on Yom Kippur, that's a Shinui Me'ayim, and therefore it's a sakana to a Vlad, and therefore the mother could drink, so she could nurse, to prevent this baby from having to have formula. So we don't have that in writing from the Chazon Ish. And the earlier, as early as Tzvi Pesach Frank, who's a contemporary, you know, the Rabbi Shul Yerushalayim, you know, in the time of Chazon Ish, a little bit afterwards, he says, that Chazon Ish might have been talking about a sick baby. We don't know exactly the situation when the Chazon Ish said that. Again, he didn't paskin that way in writing. It's a rumor that he said that. He might have been talking about a sick baby. Yeah, for a sick baby who's already misukin. So maybe we'll say that baby who's misukin, if there's a shimei, maybe it will be gorim, but for a healthy baby who's well and doesn't have any dietary sensitivities, and they didn't have formula in Bnei Brak in the 1950s, in the time of Chazon Ish. Baruch Hashem, now we have an alternative. So therefore, the poskim, already from Tzvi Pesach Frank, have rejected this leniency of the Chazon Ish. I assure you that if you Google, you'll certainly, all the lactation experts, all the Jewish lactation experts will certainly say, oh, the Chazon Ish says that it's dangerous to change the, you know, to stop nursing and to give the baby formula, and you should be able to drink when you're nursing. Again, there is a Chazon Ish who is allegedly, apocryphally, might have said that, and even so, the poskim have rejected that. Okay, now just to finish off with a few things. When we talk about, now let's talk about a general chol. We finished Muberes, we talked about a Yoledes, we talked about a Menekes. Now let's talk about a regular choler. And we have a situation where a person has a headache on Yom Kippur. So the first question that you have to ask yourself is, could they take a pill? Well, if it's a little headache, well, you're not allowed to take a pill on Shabbos either. Forget about Yechila. Yom Kippur and Shabbos both have the Issur Refuah. So you're only going to suspend the Issur Refuah if it's a Chol She'ein Bo Sakana, somebody who's, you know, lying in bed, they have a splitting headache. If you see them sitting like this during Chazaras HaShatz, and you go over to them and say, do you have a headache? They say, yeah, I have a splitting headache. So his head is down. He's the Nafalim Hishkav, or he's not functioning properly. So you tell him, okay, great, I have medicine for you. It's a Yom Kippur, I can't take medicine. You tell him, I'll tell you a secret. Medicine is not ochel. You can take medicine. But I want to just clarify, Advil has a sugar coating. Advil is covered with sucrose. It's achshavei of sorts. And therefore, before Yom Kippur, I make sure in shul to have Costco Advil, generic Advil, which do not have the sucralose coatings. Tylenol doesn't have the sucrose coatings, but Advil, the real Advil generic brand, the round Advil with this reddish, rustish color, that's sucrose coating, and you don't want to have sucrose coating. But if it's a pill, you could swallow a pill, and that's fine. You're still fasting on Yom Kippur. And I tell this to people on Shavuos B'Tammuz and on Tisha B'Av. There's so many people who go through so much pain on fast days without realizing that you could take a pill on Yom Kippur. You have to at least reach the threshold of Chol She'ein Bo Sakana, that you're Nafal Mishkav, and whatever the parameters of Chol She'ein Bo Sakana are, Nafal Mishkav. Rav Shechter likes to say that he can't function normally. If you can't daven like a mensch, your whole Yom Kippur is going to be shot because you have a really bad headache, so you take medicine. I've done it numerous times on Yom Kippur. What about water? So, people who have to take pills often know a few weeks before Yom Kippur that they'll have to take pills. So then you have to figure out. So if it's somebody who takes a pill at night, so you just say, take one pill right before Yom Kippur and take the second dosage right after Yom Kippur, 25 hours later. The problem is when you have to take a pill once at night, once during the day, so it's going to be a pill in the morning. So, if they call you 2 weeks in advance, this is what you tell them. I'm going to give you $1.69. I want you to go to the local grocery store and buy yourself a pack of Tic Tacs. And for the next week or two, I want you to take a Tic Tac every day, 3 Tic Tacs a day, and swallow them without water. I can't swallow without water. Okay, that's why I'm giving you $1.69. I'm sponsoring it. And you're going to practice Tic Tacs. No, but this pill is big. I said, okay, great. Start with Tic Tacs. After a few days with the Tic Tacs, we're going to graduate to Jelly Bellies. Swallow a Jelly Belly. Okay, so I've said this to a lot of people. Usually they smile, and they still say, no, but I can't. Or some people said, I've tried with Tic Tacs, and it still doesn't work. Okay, if that's the case, that even with the preparation, they're still not able to swallow, so the halacha is as follows. On Tisha B'Av, they could drink it with a tiny bit of water. On Yom Kippur, if they need to take a medication with a tiny bit of water, they have to foul the water. The way I tell people to foul the water, because you want to make sure the water is also not considered a meichel. If it's not good water, if it's salad water, which I'll tell you how to do in a moment, and it's and the pill is not food either, again, a chewable is food. A syrup is food. But I'm talking about a pill, a capsule, that's not food. If you foul the water, then it could be even taken on Yom Kippur in circumstances that it's necessary. Again, if it's not an important pill, anybody who has real, you know, sicknesses, like, you know, heart things for hearts, things for diabetes, and they have to take their pills. So don't say, oh, I have a guy who says, I'm just not going to take my pills. No, take your pills, but do it properly. If this, don't take your vitamins, no vitamins, but take your pills, the pills that you have to take. Again, if there's a pill that, you know, a guy who, I don't want to get into specifics because it's medical situations, but if it's a pill that he needs to take, then he should take it. If he doesn't need to take it, so he'll skip a day if he could. Or if he could double up in a dosage and skip a dosage, okay, you'll talk about the specifics with the doctor. Otherwise, take the pill, foul up the water. How do you foul the water? The way I tell people is you take a big, not a cup, a pitcher. Fill it with water, drop in 2 drips of dishwashing detergent. If you dropped it 2 drips of dishwashing detergent into your little schnapps glass, it would be so disgusting you'd throw up. But if you have it diluted throughout a pitcher, the water is foul, but it's bearable. It's bad enough that you wouldn't want to do it, but it's fine enough that you can get it down and use that water. I had a wonderful, nice old lady who I told this to my first year as a rabbi 6 years ago in this shul, and she listens to whatever the rabbi says, and she did exactly what I said, and she said, Rabbi, it wasn't a good experience. I said, what do you mean? She said, it was so soapy. I said, what did you do? She said, I did exactly what you said. I took the soap, I put it in the jar, I shook the jar, and all those bubbles made me so sick. So lesson is, don't shake the jar, because it just makes the bubbles, and you just drink the, you know, she took the bubble, you know, it was all the soapy part from the top. So just take the water without the bubbles. The water's a little bit fouled, and again, for Tisha B'Av, that's not necessary. For Yom Kippur, which is Doraisa, you do have to foul the water somewhat, if it's necessary to take this pill. Ideally, if a person could swallow the pill without the water, that is, of course, better to do. Now, it's important to realize, and this you'll have this shiloh all the time, there are many, many, many people in our shuls and in our communities who are taking anxiety medication, who are taking medications ADD, they're going to be in shul all day, they take ADD medications, or they take depression medications, and they say, no, it's not like a heart medicine, it's not, you know, it's just my mood, it's just my behavior. So the poskim do assume that that's the kind of medication that warrants a person a chol she'ein bo sakana. Could be more, but even in a not, I'm not talking about an acute case. You know, anxiety like half of our shul has, and if they have a regular prescribed medication for their anxiety or depression or whatever the situation is, so they should take it, as I said, if they could do it without the water, that's better. If they need it with water, but that is something that is at least a chol she'ein bo sakana that you're allowed to take on Shabbos and on Yontif and on Yom Kippur. The reason why is not that they're going to have a headache if they miss the dose. It's not that they're going to be nafal mishka, but the fact that they won't act in the same way, that alters, as Rabbi Sheff says, it alters the way of functioning, and that's sufficient to be considered a chola she'ein bo sakana, which is permitted to eat, and if they need to take it on Yom Kippur, so they'll do it with the, as I described, without water ideally, or with water that is slightly fouled. There could be certain medications that need to be taken with foods, then you have to do a little more research, because there are 2 reasons why they need to be taken with foods. Number one is, if you take this medication, it has a certain strength that it could cause an ulcer, a hole in the stomach, but that's usually the accumulated effect of taking a medication for 7 years could cause an ulcer in the stomach. If you take it for 1 day, so clarify that with a doctor, if taken for 1 day, it won't cause, it's not a risk, an ulcer risk. There's a second reason that sometimes you need the food to enable the absorption of the food of the medicine into the bloodstream. And depending on the nature of the... So if they need food for that, and depending on the nature of the medication, if it's a life-saving medication, you have to work that out with the doctor. You should be zoche to be healthy and wealthy and wise and follow the halacha. Thank you all for joining.